Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Fueling Forward podcast. I'm your host, registered dietitian, and former professional runner, Maddie Alm. Today's episode is a Q&A where I'll be answering questions that have been submitted to me beforehand by listeners. So if you'd like to submit a question for a future Q&A episode, you can do so on my website at www.fuelingforward.com under the podcast tab, or you can email me at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks so much for submitting questions so far, and I hope you enjoy today's Q&A. Hi, everyone. I hope you're all having a great week. Happy Friday. Heading into a long weekend, I know, for hopefully most of you. It's always nice to have a three-day weekend followed by a four-day week. That always makes the week feel so much more manageable. I feel like weekends really only feel like one day because Friday, you're working, you get home, you're tired. Saturday is kind of like the only weekend day. And then Sunday, you're just kind of like preparing for the week and you have Sunday scaries maybe, or you're just busy going to the store, running errands, you know, cleaning, all that stuff. So I love three-day weekends because it feels like you actually get a full two-day weekend for once. Nick and I are heading down to Scottsdale to visit some of his family this weekend, which will be really fun. So we're gonna get together with them, and his grandma will be there, his mom will be there. We're gonna go get facials, which I've never had a facial before, so I'm super excited about that. We'll do a little running. I love running on the canals out in Arizona. We always used to do training camps in the winter in Scottsdale, and those canals, I could just run forever on those. And we used to do workouts on them, and I just never really got sick of them. They're always really nice to run on. So looking forward to getting back on the canals with running, which will be great. And aside from that, I've just been enjoying runs from home. I think I've mentioned this before. We live kind of at the base of the Hollywood Hills, so any run that we do from home is incredibly hilly. I'm so spoiled being from Colorado, where we had so many great runs right outside of our front door, that I'm so resistant to driving places for runs. And I'm sure 99% of you listening are like, okay, get over it. We all have to drive for runs, which I know that. And I know I've been very spoiled my whole life to not have to really drive much for running, but it just makes it that much harder for me. I'm just more stubborn with it. So instead, I end up going on these insanely hilly runs from our apartment. And of course, the run out is all uphill, so it's not really a gradual start. You just hit the hill and you're on it for a full mile and a half before, you know, you flip around or you add on somewhere else. So definitely feel like those runs are kicking my butt a little bit right now, the hills, but still enjoying the weather out here. Again, I don't want to rub that in too much. I know a lot of you have had some pretty brutal winters, but hopefully everyone's starting to thaw out a little bit and you're getting some warmer weather. The ice is finally starting to melt, and hopefully you can get back to enjoying some runs outside. So that's kind of all that's going on for us right now. No big Fueling Forward announcements, of course, as usual. I just want to mention, if you're struggling with meal planning or you need some new recipe ideas, my Sunday Brunch Club weekly newsletter, I post everything I plan to make for the week. So all the recipes I'm using for my own breakfast, lunch, dinners. Usually I have one thing I make for breakfast and I kind of meal prep for the week. Same with lunches. I usually meal prep something for the week. And then dinners, we usually cook every other night. So we alternate between leftovers and cooking something. And so I share what I plan to make in that newsletter. If you're having a hard time coming up with ideas, this past week there was a carrot cake baked oatmeal that I made, which has been so good. And I made this like vanilla Greek yogurt mixed with cream cheese to make for like the icing or the frosting, and it's so tasty. So if you need things like that or you're interested, check that out. You get a free 2-week trial, so you can go back and look through the archive and see, you know, all the previous newsletters and collect all these recipes. And then after that, it's just $5 a month. So if you're interested, definitely check out that resource. And otherwise, our new dietitian, Alexa Ephraimson, is opening up a few more spots for the rest of February. So if you're interested in working with Alexa, you can head to our website and apply to work with her. And otherwise, that's pretty much it for Fueling Forward stuff. So with that, I think let's go ahead and get into today's questions. Our first question says, "Hi Maddie, I'm in a very busy time of life and I'm eating more quote unquote convenience foods. For example, the fruit and vegetable pouches from Costco are easy to take on the go. Chobani drinkable yogurts, quick carbs like Goldfish or animal crackers. Are some convenience foods better than others? Is there a difference between eating quote-unquote whole foods versus the examples I listed above? This is a super great question and a very timely question, I would say. Not sure if anyone caught the Mike Tyson ad from the Super Bowl. I have a lot of thoughts about that as a dietitian. But there is a lot of negative talk right now around the convenience or processed foods, and there's this really big push for anti-processed foods. And there are several reasons why I have a problem with that, but I think first and foremost, it's really important to know that any of these foods can fit into your diet and be useful. There is really no such thing as an inherently good or bad food, all or nothing approach. You know, I've worked with athletes who eat only whole foods and they're struggling with reds, they don't have a period, they have a lot of stomach issues, and that's not healthy for them to be dealing with all those symptoms. And then, you know, I have athletes who eat only convenience foods and maybe they're fueling enough, but they're not getting enough fiber or micronutrients to support their training. So it's all about middle ground, right? And the other issue I have with this concept of eliminating processed foods is that the term processed is so broad. For example, processed typically means that it has been processed from its original form. By that definition, almost every single food in the grocery store is processed. Baby carrots, for example, are processed technically because they are large carrots that have been peeled and washed and shaved down into smaller carrots and then packaged for convenience. So technically, baby carrots are considered processed foods. You know, thinking about like pre-cut fruits and vegetables, those are processed, but they're whole foods that are processed. The term processed foods, again, just doesn't really mean much because there are so many foods that fall into that category, and being processed from its original form does not make that food less nutrient dense. That's a very important thing to keep in mind. When we're talking about athletes, active individuals, people who are working full time, people in school, it's nearly impossible to think about having exclusively whole foods, right? You're not going to be bringing a full potato with you to class for a snack or, you know, I mean, that's an extreme example, but it's just not doable for a lot of people. And it's just not accessible for a lot of people either. So that's also something to keep in mind is what is reasonable and what is actually doable for you personally. And you can have a whole food based diet, meaning that you're focusing on consuming whole foods when possible, but there's still room for prepackaged processed convenience foods that can fill in gaps where whole foods just may not be something that's going to work for you in this phase of life or this busy schedule that you have. And that is totally fine. A lot of the rhetoric around anti-processed foods also is very elitist because a lot of people who are able to consume only whole foods tend to be of higher income levels because it's more expensive to buy a lot of the raw produce and, you know, whole grains, things like that. Those are unfortunately pricier in the grocery store. And there are a lot of Americans who, especially right now with how high grocery prices are, can't afford those foods. And if the option is not eating or eating a packet of Rice-A-Roni, Rice-A-Roni is absolutely the way they should go. And that's a choice they shouldn't feel shamed for because it's their only option and that's how they're going to feed their family. So it's a little bit elitist in that sense. It also comes down to sometimes education levels, understanding what are the benefits of whole foods, why is that important? If you don't know that, then that's not an easy choice for you to make when you're looking at the price tag and you're saying, why would I buy this $5 bag of four apples when I could buy a 10-pack of ramen and feed my kids lunch for the whole week? So there is, again, that little bit of that elitist mentality there where educational background comes into play. We also have to consider access to whole foods. People who live in food deserts, people who live in small towns and have to drive a long way to get fresh food Maybe they don't have access to transportation, or they're not able to make that trip to get Whole Foods. And again, those Whole Foods tend to be a lot more expensive the further you have to transport them outside of major cities. So again, another barrier to making that choice. So, you know, you may or may not resonate with that as somebody who's listening to this podcast, but I want to mention it because I think it's really important to understand why this anti-processed food rhetoric is so harmful to Americans right now. When it comes to athletes, when it comes to active individuals, one of the reasons why I love convenience foods as a dietitian is exactly what the term says. They are convenient. They are something that's going to help you get the fuel in that you need in a way that won't compromise the time that you do have to dedicate to fueling. Because let's be honest, one of the major reasons why athletes aren't eating enough is they don't have time. Or they say they don't have time, I should say. I don't love using time as an excuse because you find the time to train, which means you have the time. We just have to think about how we're prioritizing our time. And that's where these more processed convenience foods come in. They can help fill in the gaps in a way that doesn't compromise time or finances and will help you feed yourself and your family in a more efficient way. The other part of this question asked, are there convenience foods that are better than others? I don't love to use the term better or worse when it comes to food because, again, everything can fit and it shouldn't be an all or nothing approach. Of course, if we're thinking about buying something like a Milky Way candy bar versus a chocolate milk, like those are going to be different options, you know, when we're thinking about recovery. And of course, in that situation, there's going to be one that's preferable to the other. So definitely thinking about within the context of your day, what is this food providing me? And where I see convenience foods come in the most handy for athletes, snacks are definitely one. So I've talked a lot on here about how important it is to make sure you're eating consistently throughout the day because it's nearly impossible to hit your nutrient needs from just three meals. On top of that, if we have those bigger within-day deficits, the amount of time we're spending in between eating, we are more likely to see low energy availability as a whole. So getting snacks is very important, but snacks tend to be a time where maybe we're not at home, we're on campus all day, we're at work, we just don't have access to our kitchen, our refrigerator. That's where convenience foods are going to be super helpful. So some examples of prepackaged foods that this person mentioned in their question was looking at the fruit and vegetable pouches from Costco and the Chobani drinkable yogurts. That sounds like a pretty balanced snack to me. We've got the carbs from the fruit or veggie pouch, and then we have the protein from the Chobani drinkable yogurt. And as I've mentioned, I love when people are thinking about intentional snacks where they're pairing a carb with a protein. So yes, those foods check those boxes. They're going to get your body what it needs. And they are relatively nutrient dense, right? We've got lots of vitamins and minerals in the fruit and vegetable pouches, and we have a lot of protein, vitamins, and minerals in the drinkable yogurt. So to me, that sounds like a great option. Another example of when convenience foods are really helpful for athletes would be pre and post training. So pre-run, I've mentioned, it's really important to focus on easy to digest carbs. Most of us aren't going to be in a place where we can just have a piece of toast before a run unless we're at home and we're running in the morning. If you're running on your lunch break, if you're running after work or after school, you can't make some toast at school before you get out of seventh period and go to practice, right? Like you can't really make toast at work before you head out for your afternoon run. Maybe you can, and that's great. But a lot of us realistically just aren't going to be able to make some of those traditional pre-run foods that we think about. So that's where some of the convenience options like granola bars, this person mentioned Goldfish or animal crackers, you know, simple carbs that are going to get you that fuel that you need right before a run. One of my favorite pre-run snacks for people on the go, Rice Krispie treats, Bunny Grahams, fruit snacks, granola bars, Clif bars, you know, things that are going to be pretty simple, high in carbs, get you that quick hit of energy that you need to get through your run. All of those are going to be good options. All of those are going to be prepackaged, processed convenience options. And a lot of people will ask, well, what about the sugar? Should I be worried about the sugar? We want that sugar right before a run. Sugar has a time and a place in an athlete's diet as a tool for performance. And a good time where it's a helpful tool is pre-run. You know, people will say, oh, it's going to spike your blood sugar. Yeah, that's the point. We want our blood sugar to spike because that's what our body will use when we start our run instead of going into our energy stores or breaking down muscle tissue. So we do want that sugar right before a run. That's what's going to give us fuel. And then people are like, well, should I have the fruit or should I have the fruit snacks? You know, the whole food versus the processed food. Again, now we're thinking about what's favorable for pre-run. A whole apple has a lot more fiber compared to a packet of fruit snacks. And that fiber can hurt your stomach if you're heading out the door on a run. So I would choose the packet of fruit snacks over an apple for pre-run any day, personally. I know for a fact apples don't settle well in my stomach before a run, so I would pick the fruit snacks. You know, and then people ask, well, what about the sugar? One's natural, one's not. Your body actually cannot tell the difference. It can't. At the end of the day, a glucose molecule, which is the simplest form of sugar, is a glucose molecule. Your body cannot tell if that glucose molecule came from an apple or from fruit snacks. So again, that doesn't really matter, especially in the context of pre-run. Getting in that fuel is the bottom line. Post-run, another great example. Most athletes I work with are driving somewhere. So I just mentioned how I'm a little bit of a baby and I don't like to drive places for runs, but most people drive places to run. I had to drive for long runs, you know, in college and throughout my pro career. Sometimes you're driving 30 plus minutes to get to a run. So you have to remember that by the time you're done with your run, maybe you're stretching, chatting with your teammates, you drive home. Now it's been over an hour, and then we have to cook dinner or we have to make a meal. So the time between actually finishing our run and eating can be a lot longer if we don't pack something with us to have post-run. And again, convenience food options here, that drinkable Chobani yogurt, great combination of carbs and protein. A chocolate milk, great combination of carbs and protein. You know, some bars, depending on the type of bar, have a good combination of those two things. So having a convenience option in those cases will actually help you better execute your fueling goals, as opposed to saying, oh no, I can only eat a whole food when I get home, so I'm going to wait to eat. If we're home and we're building a meal and we're having goldfish instead of pasta with dinner, that may be an example where I would say, okay, can we maybe swap those out? If we're home, we're able to prepare something that's a little more whole food based. So, you know, I think at the end of the day, we get so hung up a lot of times on these terms of processed or ultra processed or convenience foods, prepackaged foods, and we tend to just automatically turn our nose up at them or say, those are bad for me, I need to avoid those. Or like I mentioned with all this rhetoric around those foods right now, we have a lot more fear, guilt, or shame when we do consume those foods. So it's really important to remove the emotion from that as much as possible and ask yourself, at the end of the day, what am I doing here? I'm fueling my body with the building blocks that it needs to support the training that I'm doing, and I'm doing it in a way that makes the most sense for me and my family financially, with based on the time that I have available, based on my schedule. And there is absolutely nothing to be ashamed of or fearful of with that approach. So just remembering that, you know, when you're home and you're able to cook more whole food based meals, great, make that a priority. But when you're not, or when it's just something that you need versus having the time to prepare, that's okay. It's okay to have those prepackaged foods. Just thinking about the timing, what's in those foods, and what you're trying to accomplish by eating them can help you make more informed choices around prepackaged foods. So thank you so much for that fantastic and timely question. Okay, so I'm still catching up on some questions that came in over December when I was taking a little break from the podcast, but I wanted to read this question because I think it's always relevant. Even though it's not the holidays anymore, I think this is such a great question. So this question says, hi Maddie, I'm taking a little rest over the holidays from running after about 10 to 11 months of marathon training. My brain and body told me I needed a break. 2 weeks into my rest, I'm still super hungry. I expected my appetite to decrease as I rested. Right now, I'm just taking my dogs for walks, and it hasn't. I'm trying to focus on balancing fun holiday foods with nutrient-dense meals and follow my hunger cues, but would love some help understanding what might be going on in my body and hear any advice you may have as I rest a bit longer and then return to my normal running routine. Thank you for sharing your wisdom. Yes, love, love, love this question. And there are so many different aspects to this question that I hear all the time from athletes. The first part of that being, why am I hungrier when I'm not training? Such a common question, and actually such a common occurrence. You know, I hear this all the time. I experienced this myself when I was an athlete. And there are several different reasons why you might feel hungrier during a break or an off day or rest day, easy day, compared to when you're training harder. So the first reason is that when we're training hard, we tend to have some appetite suppression happen just from that hard training. We're just going to see our body, you know, be in that state of stress a little bit longer because of that higher intensity of training, and that can blunt our appetite. So one, we just tend to have more appetite suppression when we're training hard, and that goes away when we're not training as hard. So it may be that that hunger has always been there. We're just able to actually feel it more acutely now that we're not training as hard. The second reason why I tend to see athletes feel hungrier during breaks is that they are underfueling, because they have this misconception that I'm on a break, which means I need to eat less. So they're actively trying to reduce the amount of food that they're eating, and that's not what their body needs. When you're in a break, the purpose of that downtime is for your body to absorb all of the training that you've been doing, rest, recover, repair, and rebuild so that you're ready to then train again when your training block starts back up, or when you have a, you know, hard day the next day. So underfueling in the off season is very common because of that misconception that, well, I'm not training, so I don't need as much. Your energy expenditure at your peak fitness, so just sitting around on the couch, is a lot higher than you realize, because your body is working so hard to maintain all those training adaptations over the course of that training block. So you're using more oxygen at rest because your body is more efficient, it has more mitochondria, you have more muscle tissue, which is more metabolically active, meaning your body requires more fuel. If you think of it like a furnace, right? If there's more fuel in a furnace, it's gonna burn hotter, it's gonna burn brighter. That's how our bodies are when we're kind of at our peak fitness, which is typically where we are coming into a break. If we're injured, that's also something else to think about. Our body is using that fuel to repair and heal an injury, which also increases your energy needs at rest. So in terms of energy needs changing in the off season, they don't shift as much as you would think. You know, this person mentioned that they're also still walking their dogs. Even though they describe it as casual, and maybe for them it is, I do want to mention that a lot of athletes in the off season try to convince me that they're doing casual exercise, but the reality is maybe they're walking 5-6 miles a day with their dogs. And that's a lot. That's a very high level of activity. Yes, the intensity is lower, but we're still doing some amount of training, so to speak. So a lot of athletes just don't realize how high their energy needs remain in the off season. And especially if they're trying to do any type of training, activity, cross training, that all is going to contribute to your energy needs, even if you're not running. So those are kind of the main things I see as to why you might be feeling hungrier in the off season. And I would say the way that I would approach that as an athlete is first to remind yourself that if you're feeling hungry, it's because your body needs something. Your body is not trying to trick you into eating more than it needs. You know, it's kind of a feedback loop that's built into your body. If there's something missing, it sends a signal to your brain that you're hungry. Now it's time to go eat something. You know, and if you're hungry, listening to that hunger cue and going ahead and having something to eat is always going to be the right choice. You know, even if you're like, well, I didn't run today, so why am I still eating my snacks? Because your body needs it and it's telling you that it needs it. So really just working on listening to and trusting your body. I know that can be super hard, but just remembering it's not a one-to-one ratio of training to eating. There's so many other factors when it comes to your body's energy needs. The other thing I want to emphasize with the importance of fueling in the off season or during some downtime is what's coming next. If we underfuel, first of all, we don't get as much out of that downtime. So again, the whole purpose of taking time off, which I know is really hard for most runners, taking time off is to make sure your body is healed, recovered, and rested so you can start training again. If you underfuel during that downtime, you're not giving your body the full opportunity to rest, recover, heal, and rebuild. So when you do start running again, you're not going to be as recovered as you should be, and that's going to catch up to you earlier on in the training block. So a good example of this would be like collegiate athletics. If you go from cross country, you have a down week, and then you underfuel heading into indoor track. Now you're training hard for indoor track. You have a down week heading into outdoor track, and you've underfueled during that down week as well. Over the course of the season, picture it like the battery bar, you know, in a video game. Your battery is just getting lower and lower and lower, and it's not going to have time to recharge. And now we're in April or May when we have conference races, when we're trying to run times that will qualify us for regionals or nationals, and we can't do it. Our body can't do it. And it's super frustrating because we're like, well, I just put in this full year of training. I had a great cross-country season. I had a decent indoor season. And now I'm really struggling with this outdoor season. And that can be super confusing because you're like, well, I've been training so consistently. It's not just about the training. It's also about the recovery. And I've mentioned before that you're only as good as you recover. You're not getting better when you're running hard. During those hard runs, you're not getting better. You're getting better when your body adapts to those hard runs, when you're resting. So thinking about those breaks, those down periods as an extended opportunity to adapt to all that training and prepare your body. If we underfuel, we take away our ability to get the most out of that. And then that 2 weeks that we just took off, not that it was all for nothing, but we didn't get as much out of it as we could have. And that's kind of a waste, in my opinion, if we're not taking full advantage of that off season, because as runners, we so rarely get an off season. And I think maybe one of even the most important aspects, aside from just getting the most out of your break, is giving yourself a mental break, not thinking about what you're eating all the time, not thinking about, oh, is this going to hurt my stomach for a long run? You know, not thinking about, oh, I can't go to happy hour with my friends on Saturday night because I have a long run Sunday and I don't want my stomach to hurt. But it's a time in your life where you can really just let go of all expectations and structure and just let yourself be a human for a while, which again, most runners don't realize, you know, when you're in the peak of training, your days are so structured and so rigid and you have your fueling schedule and it's really important that you execute it. And it just gives you a little bit of a mental break to just let go of that for a second. And that's where just simplifying it to eating when you're hungry is so helpful, because then you're not overthinking your food in the off season. And then you can just really lean into, for example, this person was during the holidays. You can lean into the holidays. You can enjoy those meals. You can go to happy hour with your friends who are in town. And you don't have to worry about how it's going to affect a workout or a long run, because you don't have to do that. So from a mental break standpoint, also hugely important to give yourself permission in the off season to just relax, listen to your body, eat when you're hungry, and not be worrying so much about the foods that you're eating. So if you're heading into a down season, I hope that resonates with you. I hope that you're able to continue fueling yourself well and remember that you are doing this with a purpose. There is a purpose for this downtime, and to get the most out of this downtime mentally and physically, continuing to fuel your body is so, so important, even if you're not training as much. So thank you for that great question. Okay, our next question says, "Hi Maddie, I'm a postpartum runner and I've been struggling with how my body has changed even a year later. Is there a healthy way for a runner to quote unquote lose weight to get back to your quote unquote normal self? Or should I keep running and not worry about my new clothing size and how my body looks? It's so hard to find the balance of wanting to be healthy and feel like myself when the runner in me knows I shouldn't restrict. Thanks for your podcast. It's so, so helpful to runners." Fantastic question. I'm sorry to hear you're struggling with this. I know that it's so, so difficult. It can feel so isolating. Just know that you're not alone. There are so many people who struggle with this. And first and foremost, congratulations on your birth. I don't know if you're a first-time mom or second-time or whatever it is, but congratulations. Regardless, that's a very big accomplishment to go through pregnancy and postpartum and be able to continue to run. That's huge. So I think there's a couple ways I would come at this question as a dietitian. My first question would be, why are you wanting to lose weight? This is a hard question for a lot of people because the answer tends to be, I don't like how I look. And I don't want to minimize your emotions or how you're feeling about your body shifting. I want to be very clear that it is so hard. It is so hard to go through body changes. I went through this myself after I retired from elite running. I gained weight. I had to buy new jeans. There's nothing more unfair, in my opinion, than having to buy new clothes when your body shifts. It's like insult to injury. You know, it's like, okay, I get it. My jeans don't fit anymore. Let me go spend $100 on a new pair of jeans that's a different size. You know, it's hard. There's just so many different factors emotionally and physically when your body shifts, and I do not want to minimize that. But my question is, does losing weight or changing your body fix those issues? And I can guarantee you that there was a time when you were in a smaller body where you still struggled with body image, or you had bad body image days, and maybe they were fewer and farther between. And you might be saying, yes, if I went back to how my body looked before, I would be so much happier. But you don't know that. And you also can't guarantee that changing your body, you know, back to quote unquote how it was before, is going to resolve those challenges. Because the other thing you have to think about, you know, this person phrased it as getting back to my normal self. You are postpartum, maybe you have multiple kids now. Your normal self is different from what your normal self was a year ago. You know, maybe you weren't a mom a year ago and now you are. And it's easy to use our body as a way to say what our normal self is. But somebody once phrased this, and this is kind of a weird way to say it, but your body is the skin suit with which you live your life. So if we kind of zoom out from the skin suit, if we zoom out from the body, are you the same person this year that you were last year? Probably not. After everything that you've been through physically with pregnancy, birth, postpartum, that alone can change who you are as a person. And so it's important to think about, does changing your body mean that you're getting back to that person? Because the reality is you're not going to. You are in a different place in your life mentally. And maybe it's okay that your body reflects change. I think as a society, we tend to view body changes as bad or negative or something that needs to be fixed, but they're part of life. Our body is not going to look the same our entire life. And I think especially as women, we are not prepared for how many phases of our body we're going to experience throughout our lives. You know, we have puberty that we go through when we're 13 and we're ready for that and we know that's going to happen. That doesn't always make it easier, but we know it's happening. But then we have another hormonal shift that tends to happen as we go from our teens to our 20s, and again from our 20s to our 30s. If you're someone who chooses to have children, every single pregnancy is going to change your body. Then we go through menopause, and that's going to change our bodies. So as women, we have so many different phases of life with our body. And for some reason, we all measure it against like our high school self. We're like, well, I want to weigh, you know, a lot of people have the number like 120 pounds in their mind. They're like, I want to weigh 120 pounds. It's like, well, why? You know, what does that do for you? Does that change anything about your overall health? Does that change your happiness? Does that change your mental health? Chances are it doesn't. And we get so caught up in changing our body that we forget to ask ourselves why. Why am I really wanting to do this? So that can be a hard question. And that may have been kind of a blunt answer. And again, I do not want to minimize how hard it is for your body to change and just wanting to be back to looking like you used to. I completely empathize with that. But just take a minute to ask yourself those hard questions. Why do I want to change my body? And then the next question is, what does changing my body do for me? Again, for me, if somebody truly needs to lose weight, there's typically a health outcome that we're measuring. So maybe this is somebody who has a higher risk for type 2 diabetes. We have high blood pressure. I'm not even going to throw high cholesterol in there because underfueling and being underweight can cause you to have high cholesterol. And unfortunately, I've had a lot of underweight athletes whose doctors have told them, because your cholesterol is high, you need to eat less fat and eat less carbs, which is very much not helpful advice. So I'm not even going to group high cholesterol in there with a health outcome because there are so many different factors to cholesterol and weight is often not one of them. But if we have, you know, insulin resistance, we have maybe type 2 diabetes, a new diagnosis, we have, you know, high blood pressure, we have cardiovascular disease, evidence of cardiovascular disease happening. If there is a true reason why, from a health standpoint, that we need to lose weight, then yes, that's going to be something that would probably be recommended for you by a healthcare provider to manage your health. If it's just that we feel uncomfortable and we don't like that we have to buy a new size of clothes, I don't know. You know, is that a reason, again, to really try to change your body? And I hear the word in this question, I know I shouldn't restrict. If restriction is coming into the question, then again, are we making the smart choice for our body? Are we doing the things that are going to support our overall health and well-being? And it's okay to reevaluate what's important to you at this point in life. You know, you have kids now, maybe you have multiple kids, and being there for your kids is a priority, of course. Being present, being healthy, being able to play with them, go to their, you know, field day during elementary school, or, you know, go on a run with them when they're training for high school track. You know, these are all things that your body allows you to do only if you're taking care of it, you know, and then we have to think about big picture long term. Are we setting ourselves up for an increased risk of osteoporosis? Do we want to have more children in the future? Are we potentially compromising fertility by restricting too much? Are we breastfeeding and trying to recover from postpartum? You know, is that restriction going to limit our ability to heal or produce milk or things like that that are also incredibly important? So there are so many more important things to focus on than just that number on the scale, that it can also be helpful to ask yourself, what's important to me right now? And what is it important for my body to be able to do? And what's the best way for me to support my body on that journey? The answer will almost never be restrict and lose weight. And again, I know it's so hard to have those body shifts happen. So potentially working with a therapist, if you feel like that's something that you're really, really struggling with, talking to a mental health professional who can give you some tools to navigate those thoughts can be so helpful. I've been working with a therapist for the past few years, and after my body shifted in the off season, I talked to her about it. You know, I was like, man, I'm really struggling with this. And we talked about it, and it really did help me. So there's no shame in asking for help or admitting that you're struggling. You know, it's okay to struggle, and anyone whose body shifts, it's hard. But that doesn't mean that changing your body is going to resolve the problem. And it doesn't mean that you need to change your body. So I guess most people are disappointed to hear that answer. They want to hear that it's okay to focus on losing weight. And I think if you're taking care of your body, you're fueling it properly, you're moving your body in a way that feels good to you, then chances are your body is going to find a weight where it's healthy. And you don't have to force anything, and you don't have to make that happen. If something is really difficult to maintain and you're losing weight, chances are it's probably not a healthy approach. And as soon as you kind of stop those behaviors, your weight will probably go back up, which can start that cycle all over again and is really frustrating. So finding an approach that's sustainable, that helps you feel your best, focusing on measures of how your body is feeling and performing outside of the number on the scale, and then just maybe using this as an opportunity to go on a shopping spree. I had to buy new clothes. It sucked having to buy new clothes, but it was a good opportunity for me to upgrade my wardrobe. And I found some really fun stuff that I love to wear that I feel good in. And I feel better wearing jeans that fit me than trying to squeeze myself into jeans that don't, where that tightness of the waistband is a constant reminder that my body has shifted and I'm not as mentally focused or as present when I'm with people when my jeans are too tight. So it's worth it for me to go up a size. And you also have to remember, clothing sizes are just dumb. They're just different from every company. One company, maybe you wear a size 4, another you wear a size 10. It doesn't mean anything. Clothes are made to fit your body. Your body is not made to fit the clothes. So just remember that. Buy the clothes that fit your body. Don't worry about what the number on the tag says. That's completely irrelevant. So I know all of that can be easier said than done, but It's a hard thing to go through. You're not alone in this. I completely empathize with you, but I hope that your body is recovering well postpartum and that you're able to get back into the level of running that feels good for you. Okay, our last question for today comes from Avery. And Avery says, "Hi, over time and learning through your podcast, I've learned the importance of nutrition post-running. I feel that I've really nailed the timing and ratio after a run. However, I'm still waking up in the morning very unrecovered, sore, and achy, even after easy runs. Could this be a sign of improper nutrition? Any recommendations of something to add or to focus on? Thank you. Yes, great question. Recovery can be so tricky to nail down. Post-run, I know, can be really difficult to nail down as well. So a couple of things I'm thinking about hearing this question. The first thing is maybe it's not just about that post-run snack. You know, adding in something post-run, if you're not already, it can be a super great tool for potentially helping with some soreness. If we add that in and we're still experiencing soreness, that either tells me, one, it wasn't the right thing to add in, maybe we need to adjust what we've added in, or two, maybe that adding something in post-run wasn't enough to make up for what we're missing out on the rest of the day, and that's where we're still experiencing that soreness. So the first thing I would do with this person, if I was working with them, I would kind of have them run me through a typical day and talk about what time they're eating, what they're eating at meals, what we're eating pre-run or potentially even during the run, depending on their training load. So first getting a feel for what does our energy balance as a whole look like? Are we eating enough calories, carbs, protein, fat to support not only our training, but our body's systems functioning at their best? Because if we don't have those building blocks that our body needs to recover from training, we are more likely to be sore all the time, more likely to see muscle tissue breakdown, have trouble adapting to training, maybe we're struggling to get better at running, to get faster, you know, things like that. So first and foremost, are we eating enough? You know, looking at our meals, are we balancing our plates properly with carbs, color, protein, and fats? So for example, if a runner is running 50 miles a week or more, we want every single meal to have at least half the plate as starchy carbohydrates. So a lot of times runners will be thinking about eating less on easy days versus hard days. You know, I kind of touched on this earlier. If you're running 50 plus miles a week especially, most of your days should actually look the exact same. Even though you're running a little less on easy days, a little more on hard days, chances are, you know, with that appetite suppression that can happen, your runs being longer, maybe your schedule's a little bit tighter, maybe we're slightly under on those hard days. And then on easy days, we can kind of make up for that a little bit. Maybe we're slightly over. And over the course of a week, a month, etc., we're in a state of energy balance. So it's not just about eating to support that specific day of training, but it's looking as a whole, what's our training load? And are we fueling appropriately for that? So maybe this athlete is under fueling on easy days when we're supposed to be recovering, and now we're not getting that recovery from easy runs like we should. So now we're feeling a little more tired or broken down going into a hard run, and then we're more broken down post hard run, etc., where it's kind of building on itself all season. So are we fueling appropriately based on our mileage? Are we building our plates appropriately at meals? Are we eating snacks throughout the day? So, you know, I've mentioned this so many times, but making sure that we don't have these big gaps between fueling, whether that's an easy day, off day, or hard day. Ideally, we don't want to go more than 3 hours without eating. So taking a look at the basic structure of our day, does that make sense with the training that we're doing? Then we want to take a look at our pre-run fuel. Are we eating before runs? If we're not eating before runs, we are more likely to be sore post-run, regardless of whether or not we're having a post-run snack. So making sure that we're getting, you know, something that's high in carbs within an hour of our run. If we're running out the door first thing in the morning, maybe we're just having something small like some fruit snacks or an applesauce pouch. Something is always going to be better than nothing because our body will use that fuel instead of breaking itself down to provide fuel, which will then help with recovery. So making sure we're fueling before every single run, whether that's an easy run, a cross train, a double, a hard workout, all of it. We want to fuel before all of our training sessions. Potentially looking at fueling during. So if we're running for 75 plus minutes, again, regardless of whether that's an easy day or not, we want to incorporate some fuel during. And I've said this before, but you may not notice a difference in how you feel during the run itself. It may be more so that you notice post-run that you're recovering better because you're not as depleted after that run. So when I was running 80 miles a week, some of my easy runs were 12 miles. So I would be out there for 75 plus minutes. So in those cases, I would bring fruit snacks with me in my shorts, and I would eat them at halfway before I would turn around. And that really helped with my recovery and also getting in enough carbs to support the volume that I was doing. So thinking about, do I need to add some fuel during my runs? Am I doing my long runs with nothing? And that's kind of setting me up for the beginning of the week to be sore the whole week. So looking at your during run fueling, do I need to add something here? Maybe you need to add some fuel between the warm-up and the workout. That was something I always did for workout days. I would either eat fruit snacks or take a gel in between the warm-up and the workout itself, especially on higher volume days. So looking at your during run fuel. And then lastly, thinking about, are we getting the right thing post-run? So making sure that we have both carbs and protein in the appropriate ratios. You know, I just had a call with a runner who was having a recovery drink that he was making with protein powder, milk, and collagen. So we had about 50 grams of protein in that recovery drink and only about 20 grams of carbs. For a runner, that is way too much protein and way too low on carbs. So in theory, we're getting a lot post-run and we're getting protein and we're getting carbs, but they're not in the right ratio. And then that was affecting his appetite for dinner. So he was having a hard time eating enough at dinner. And that kind of set up the whole rest of the cycle of maybe potentially not eating enough earlier in the day. So post-run, what I typically recommend is aiming for around 20 to 30 grams of protein and at least double, ideally triple that amount of carbs. Anywhere from 40 to 60 grams of carbs if you're having 20 grams of protein, anywhere from 60 to 90 grams of carbs if you're having 30 grams of protein. So really being mindful of those ratios, are we getting enough? And instead of just doing a protein drink, pairing that protein drink with something that's high in carbs, like a banana, Teddy Grahams, fruit snacks, Rice Krispie treat, applesauce, some of those convenience foods that we talked about earlier can help you get more carbs in post-run. And if you're somebody who really struggles with appetite after a run, liquid options are great. So 2 chocolate milks is actually a really great ratio of carbs to protein. And it's liquid, so that tends to be easier to get down. It's also cheaper than buying a bunch of protein powders in general. So thinking about things like that, how can I increase my carb to protein ratio? Or if we're going to be having a meal, you know, making sure that it's properly balanced and within an hour of training. You know, I just mentioned earlier, sometimes people don't realize how much time gets away from them between running and eating. They might think they're eating right after a run, but if we really break it down, by the time they finish running, chat with their friends, drive home, shower, make food, it's been at least an hour, maybe more. So maybe looking at that window of time between finishing your run and getting in that post-workout snack. So those are a couple places I would start. If you're doing all those things and nothing is helping, potentially getting some blood work done to look at your iron levels. Low ferritin can also cause you to feel chronically sore. So getting a look at blood work and then potentially working with a dietitian as well if you're just trying all the things and nothing is helping. But thank you so much for that question, Avery, and hopefully something in here will help you feel less sore. All right, that's all the questions for today. Thank you all so much for submitting questions. Continue to submit your questions, please. I love the questions I've been getting and love looking through all of them and hope to get through all of them as soon as possible. So please keep submitting your questions. And next week, I'm really excited for our guest. It's someone who's going to be very exciting to hear from. So stay tuned for that episode. Otherwise, I hope you all have a great weekend and thank you for listening. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode of the Fueling Forward podcast. If you'd like to submit a question for future Q&A episodes, you can do so on my website at www.fuelingforward.com under the podcast tab, or you can email me at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you at the next Fueling Forward Friday.